From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. A week after the strongest hurricane ever to hit the Atlantic made landfall on the Bahamas, the bodies of victims are still emerging from the wreckage. The scale of devastation wrought by Hurricane Dorian is unprecedented, as the storm battered the Caribbean island nation for two whole days, uprooting trees, obliterating structures, and flooding the coast. Observers describe the storm's aftermath as visually similar to the result of a nuclear war. Anger and impatience is now building up as aid is slow to reach many parts of the islands. There's been a collaborative international aid effort, as well as a number of private aid organizations pouring supplies into the Bahamas, but so far they're struggling to meet the needs of survivors. My guest is Susan Romansky, Senior Director for Capacity Building and Global Engagement at Mercy Corps. Welcome to the program, Susan.
Thank you, Sonali.
So your organization is one of several aid organizations that is attempting to gather supplies and distribute them in the Bahamas. Let's talk a little bit about what has happened to the island before we get to what you're doing. For those who are not familiar, you know, Bahamas is a very popular tourist destination. If you've never taken a tourist trip to Bahamas, or if you're not from the Caribbean, it's essentially hundreds of very tiny islands, an archipelago of islands in the Caribbean, right? With two major islands?
That's right. You know, it's been over a week, and the two islands that were really hit the hardest are the northernmost islands, Abaco and Grand Bahama. And when you think about a Category 5 hovering over them for 48 hours, you can only imagine the tremendous, tremendous damage that Dorian has inflicted on those islands.
And so Category 5 is essentially the strongest category of storms, right? There's categories 1 through 5. For a storm at that highest category to, as you were saying, hovering, you know, just sitting over an inhabited area for two whole days, I suppose we shouldn't be surprised at the destruction we've seen.
Yes, I mean, it is, our teams just are really in awe of that level of destruction. There are places in Abaco Island where 60% of all infrastructure is just completely devastated. You know, we estimate there's about 76,000 people who were affected in those two islands.
Wow, 76,000, and I understand that the total population is about 400-something thousand of the entire set of islands. Has, as far as you know, have the waters receded? Because as the storm moved away from the Bahamas, there were still many areas that remained flooded, remained underwater.
Well, and that's been part of the problem, right? Because when you have airstrips that are flooded, when you have roads that are impassable, obviously access to the people who need it most is very, very difficult. And so even for search and rescue teams, it has been a very, very difficult challenge. You know, there's going to have to be a lot of dewatering. There's just going to have to be a lot of work to clear what needs to be clear to reach all areas.
And of course, this is where the aftermath of a natural disaster like this can have an even greater negative impact, right? You have the sort of people and infrastructure impacted by the storm. And then when you have waters in which corpses are rotting, sitting there for day after day after day, the potential for disease and the spreading of disease through contaminated water can sometimes have an even worse impact, right?
That's right. And I think that's why the priority right now is the search and rescue efforts, but also just looking at how do we get the standing water removed and how do we make sure that people are also evacuated from dangerous areas. So right now what is happening is there is still a search and rescue operation going on and people are being evacuated. There's also a lot of surge medical capacity that has been brought to the island to help in Abaco and in Grand Bahama. because as you can imagine, the health clinics and the hospitals obviously need support.
Now, there are reports of the official death toll, and the numbers have been somewhat small so far in the double digits. And I understand the government has said that the priority right now isn't counting the number of bodies, but just getting aid and cleaning up. It's very possible that that death toll could be in the three digits, maybe even the four digits, as we saw what happened with Hurricane Maria in Puerto Rico?
Yes, I mean, obviously for us, any death count is terrible. And, you know, right now the official word from the Bahamian government is 43. But yes, we very much expect it to go higher, unfortunately.
Does the fact that we're talking about devastation spread out, you know, across two islands and possibly also some of the smaller islands, does that complicate aid efforts? Is it harder to just, you know, because the infrastructure has been ruined as well, the roads have been ruined, just transporting supplies, I imagine, is a huge challenge?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, we were in Puerto Rico 2 years ago, and you know, it really is a challenge when you're dealing with islands. And what I would say is just everybody is really trying to coordinate efforts so that we don't make it worse in terms of clogging the airspace. But yes, it's incredibly challenging right now, the context. And I mean, happy to say a lot of the airstrips are getting much better. The roads are being cleared, but it's still not as fast as anybody would want it to be.
I understand that someone set up a website, DorianPeopleSearch.com, where people were basically posting information about their missing loved ones, which is a really, you know, useful use of the internet and social media. But is there internet access in the Bahamas right now? Is there even electricity or running water? Are there parts of the country where that infrastructure is just missing or destroyed?
Oh, absolutely. And on Abaco Island, there really isn't any of those services. Miraculously, there is about 30% cell phone coverage. And so that, you know, has been a way that even our teams are able to communicate with us via WhatsApp, right? So that application seems to be working, thank goodness. But yes, I mean, you know, our teams, most relief organizations have to have redundant communications, right? So because a lot of the infrastructure is completely down.
Is the government struggling to meet the needs? There have been complaints by residents saying they've seen the U.S. Coast Guard, they've seen private aid organizations, they haven't seen their own government stepping up. What is your assessment of the government's capability and whether it's fulfilling its need, the needs of its people? Prime Minister Hubert Minnis has been pretty vocal and been pretty outspoken.
Right. You know, I think it is challenging for any government, honestly. I mean, what they are having to deal with right now is incredible. And what I can say is that there are attempts to coordinate relief efforts. Right. I think on the access issues, I think that they are changing by the hour. And right now, I'm happy to say that, you know, the United Nations is also there working with the government. I know our government, the USAID, has been there and has commitments. And I think it's just going to take everybody supporting the government to have a successful relief operation.
Is it possible that there are still people that are stranded in cutoff areas of the country that have not been in contact with any kind of aid giver?
You know, I think I can't speak to that right now because I do feel like there is just a huge number of assessments going on and search and rescue that's still going on. But I want to say I'm hopeful that no, most of the island has been covered, but I really can't say for certain. All I know is that, you know, we have to give priority to those flights for search and rescue. And so I think a lot of where sometimes the impatience builds for aid to be getting there, right? But if a helicopter or a plane is going in for search and rescue, and then they're coming back out with evacuees, aid organizations can get on after that. And that really is the biggest priority for the government right now.
And of course, we are seeing the devastating impacts, not of one storm, but of climate change, right? I mean, it's so important for us to acknowledge. You were talking about Mercy Corps' work in Puerto Rico 2 years ago. Islands are the most inhabited islands are the most vulnerable to the rising waters, to the storms. This is not going to be the last such storm.
Yes, unfortunately not. Obviously, while we can't attribute, any specific weather related event to climate change, we certainly know that the increasing frequency and intensity of storms has, it's all related. And so I don't see this going away at all. And, one of the things, for example, that we're bringing on the island that we already have brought on the island are solar lanterns. Hmm. And that may not be a typical thing that a lot of relief agencies might bring. But if you think about the importance of a solar lantern, not only for light and security, but also the ones we bring have a cell phone charging capability. And, getting a hold of loved ones during this time when there is a little cell phone coverage in some areas, that's critical. And so while not a typical response, that's something that we've been able to do on both islands that we feel is very important.
So Abaco and Grand Bahama, the two major islands on the Bahamas that have been most deeply impacted by the hurricane, which parts of those islands is Mercy Corps engaged in right now?
Well, right now, what we're trying to do is identify local partners that actually work with people on those islands and know them best. And that's really the best way that we work. By identifying local partners, they will make sure that the right people, the most vulnerable groups, and that's really what we look for, the most vulnerable groups get that aid. And so that's what we're doing now. We're working through local partners. So while we may be bringing things in, we are ensuring that it is local capacity that is helping us do those distributions.
And so what is that local infrastructure like? So there are existing networks, of course, on the ground, I imagine, as there are in any country. Are they sort of anti-poverty organizations? Are they, just general charities, maybe religious organizations that you're working with?
Yeah, so we have, for example, one that is really has been working on youth development, but for at-risk youth. Then there's another organization that has provided spiritual care and support for vulnerable groups. And so with those type of organizations, they have a very good idea of the indicators in their country that really look at vulnerability. And so through them, we have the partnership to ensure that aid is distributed. And, we're looking right now at about 3,000 families. That's really our goal for the next few months, to reach 3,000 families with emergency kits. So things like tarps and mosquito nets and purification for water, really trying to meet those basic needs.
You said mosquito nets. And again, with the standing water in the aftermath of a storm that dumps a huge amount of rain, that potential for the disease to spread is quite enormous, not just water contamination from rotting corpses, but from mosquitoes and the spread of mosquitoes, which can spread disease. Mosquitoes are notorious for carrying a tremendous amount of disease. So these are kinds of things that residents of the Bahamas have to really worry about protecting themselves as they try to rebuild, but also look. So it's a sort of a short-term, I imagine, short-term issue, but also the long-term goal to rebuild their homes, right?
That's right. This is going to be a massive recovery operation after initial needs are met, for sure. I mean, we look at Puerto Rico and we are still there after 2 years, and really looking at building up communities. I think for me, the importance of ensuring that we are supporting the local market is really, really important. And so everything that we can do as humanitarian organizations to support that local market to get back up and running, that's what we're going to do. So I think this very initial phase of bringing in things that right now they may not have enough of on the island, like mosquito nets, is important. But we really are looking towards the future, too, to see, you know, how can we support the tourist industry, small businesses actually come back and recover.
And so the major industry, I imagine, off the Bahamas has been tourism, which of course means that when you have such devastation, the infrastructure that can support that industry is also destroyed.
Yes, it is. But, you know, through the years, I mean, we've just seen incredible resilience from people. They generally, even if they evacuate for a while, I mean, there are just people who don't want to leave their homes or at least want to come back and rebuild. And whether, you know, it's in a few months or a year or so, I mean, I really believe that communities come back. And communities rebuild. And we're seeing that kind of energy from the people of the Bahamas already in the way that they're trying to help each other with this incredible catastrophe.
The amounts, the estimates for rebuilding what has been destroyed range into the billions. Bahamas is going to need international aid, right? Governments are going to have to come together to help the Bahamas.
Yes. And, you know, I'm happy to say that I know there's already been some commitments to that effect. But yes, it is. It's going to take a lot, unfortunately.
So far, I understand the U.S. Coast Guard and the British Royal Navy have been active on the ground in attempting to directly provide aid. Even some of the cruise ship companies have been attempting to take in medical supplies. Is that true?
Yes, we have not been interacting with them in, you know, directly, but what I can say is we know that the U.S. through exactly what you said and also just committing to supporting the Bahamas is going to come through and help the Bahamas. We've seen really great support so far.
Now, what can Americans do who want to directly help people in the Bahamas, both with the sort of short-term aid that's desperately needed right away and the long-term aid? Can sending funds to organizations like yours, even if it may not necessarily directly impact the local economy, as you were saying, can that help in the short term and then in the long term once it's starting to be rebuilt, just maybe go visit as a tourist?
Yeah, you know, financial contributions are always the best. And I really say that because, as I mentioned, you really want to build back the local economy, right? And so financial contributions for us, one of the strategies we use is cash assistance. After, you know, bringing some basic needs in that we can't get on the local market, we really, as in Puerto Rico, give people the dignity of choice. And so
you just give them cash. I love that.
We do cash distributions through selected criteria using our local partners. And so I think, you know, financial contributions to organizations that are looking at that as opposed to just the in-kind, I think that's important. We accept financial contributions, obviously, at www.mercycorps.org. But also for those immediate supplies, we have, if you go to amazon.com, you can actually purchase things that we know are needed and the government has asked for in this emergency phase.
And I mentioned traveling to the Bahamas as a tourist. However, of course, there's a great irony there that airline flights contribute pretty strongly to climate change. You know, and so there's certainly conundrums of how people can help. There's so many related issues in terms of the way the global economy is works, the way in which our fossil fuel consumption relates to it, and of course how governments themselves work. There's also the issue of borders and refugees. Whenever you have these sorts of natural disasters, you have, especially those directly linked to climate change, you have climate refugees. And I'm sure you've seen the story of people on a ferry in the who were reaching the U.S. recently being asked for a U.S. visa. These are Bahamian refugees of Hurricane Dorian. And they were asked for their visa, for U.S. visas, and those who didn't have it were told to disembark. And so this is the kind of thing that, sadly, victims of these climate disasters are going to have to contend with, right?
Yeah, it's true. And you know, we're really hoping that that is an isolated incident, because, as I said before, you know, so far, I feel like the U.S. in general has been very supportive. But I think these are issues that our agency, you know, has looked at around the world. And just to be very, very clear that we absolutely believe that when a country has suffered this kind of disaster, we absolutely have to waive the visa requirements to accept. That is our humanitarian imperative. So,
and if I may editorialize a little bit on my own, of course, the vast majority of Bahamian residents are Black, and they are not in the category of the kind of immigrant that our current administration would like to see more of in this country. I mean, just to be frank, these are non-white refugees, and non-white refugees have been sent a very clear message by the Trump administration that they are not wanted in the U.S. And of course, more and more we're going to see as these climate disasters impact vulnerable communities, non-white communities, poor communities, the U.S. is going to be shutting its door. Just recently, there was news that the U.S. government would be reducing its refugee program so drastically that the total number of refugees that it really wants to accept under Trump is going to be down to almost zero. Well, that's my side editorializing on this issue. It's a personal one to me as an immigrant. Susan, give out the website where people can find out more about Mercy Corps.
Sure. It's www.mercycorps.org. And Sonali, I really appreciate you bringing this catastrophe to your listeners. Really appreciate what you're trying to do, and just letting everybody know that we really, really appreciate everyone's support on this.
And we know that Americans, like people all over the world, want to come to the help of people in need. And so far, the response, I understand, has been quite good. Are you happy with the response that you're getting from American donors across the country? Do you wish that more people would give?
Well, I think what happens a lot of times, Sonali, is people will think about it at first and you know, not really understand that this is a really long-term effort. I mean, to really help people recover, you know, it's not about the first week or 2 weeks. It really is a longer time period. And so what I would just say is that we so appreciate everybody's generosity, and just keep in mind that this really is a longer-term effort as well.
Yes, unfortunately, our attention spans are short. Media coverage attention span is short. And as you mentioned earlier, Puerto Rico is still waiting for aid that our president claims they got. But in fact, he claims that they got a lot more than they were even appropriated, and most of which they have not yet gotten. So certainly for private citizens to step in and be generous is important, is imperative as they work for political change alongside you know, one another, so that we don't have to have these kinds of things happening. Again, that website, mercycorps.org, that's mercy, C-O-R-P-S.org. Susan, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
My guest has been Susan Romanski. She is a Senior Director for Capacity Building and Global Engagement at Mercy Corps. We've been discussing the devastation in the Bahamas from Hurricane Dorian and how you can help. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Do subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo and find our audio podcast on iTunes and now Spotify.